Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, I'm Jeffrey Riley. We move into a discussion of juvenile justice in America at the micro, not the macro level. Jeff Hobbs introduces us to young males in the system in his recent book, Children of the State, Stories of Survival and Hope in the Juvenile Justice System. Jeff Hobbs is a journalist and author of literary nonfiction with several books under his belt. Jeff joined us in September 2020 to talk about his book, Show Them You're Good, about four young men finishing high school in L.A., looking ahead to college. Jeff Hobbs, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back. It means a lot.
It is a pleasure. This is a big subject. I mean, how do you get your arms even partly around the juvenile justice system?
Juvenile justice, you're right. It's big and... I guess what I almost always do, because I don't like to write about the system, I try to write about relationships within the system. And Matt Desmond, who's the author of Evicted, in his review wrote that it's a book about the unbroken people within a broken system. So I think when you start, I don't want to say small because people are not small, but... I just start with people.
Yeah, you mentioned Evicted. We had that book on as well, and I remember some of the vivid scenes in there of the icy cold Milwaukee days dealing with having to change apartments and the people.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, it's some great work. But it's the same kind of stuff that you give us here in the sense of we get to know people like Josiah at the Ferris School in Delaware. And I'll talk about him just in a minute. There's an early quote in the book of somebody involved in the juvenile justice system saying, "I hope within 5 years of leaving, my students aren't dead." That's a rather profound statement.
It was profound and chilling. And also the gentleman who told me that was experienced. He'd been teaching there for 20 years and a good teacher and really skilled. And I was excited to sit down with him. So it was sad hearing him say that because it does not reflect his energy in the classroom. He's a really bright leader of a classroom. But I think what he was trying to communicate was that when he began teaching in juvenile hall, and I think a lot of people don't even realize that there are teachers in juvenile hall, that they're actually schools and kids learn math and history. He was just saying when he started, he had these sort of young ideas of just turning lives around. He learned that a lot of the issues of incarceration are, as you began with, they're just too huge and too intractable to alter in the classroom.
Yeah, that teacher, and another little bit of poetry, in a sense, just delivering the detail to us, lets us know that he eats his lunch in the woods every day. Why?
Oh, he just, teaching in that environment, because there's a lot of turnover. Kids are in and out, and almost all these kids are in, like, the peak crisis point of their lives because they're in jail and they're alone. For the adults in the system who, largely they get equated as all being guards, but they're not. They're counselors, they're teachers, they're sports coaches, just like any school. But it's a lot to carry. So, he just described, even in the middle of winter, just needing to spend that hour of his day outside eating a sandwich that his wife makes him. Being in the quiet, listening to the birds to just refill the tank a little bit before going back for the afternoon classes.
Jeff, tell us about the three places you focused upon and how you ended up choosing them.
So the book covers two actual detention facilities. One is in Wilmington, Delaware, which is a detention center. It's where kids go after they've seen a judge and been sentenced. So they're there for a definitive amount of time, 3 months, 6 months, a year max, usually. And I spend time there because I actually grew up near there. And the city of Wilmington, Delaware is really interesting because it's a small city, but it has big city problems. And so I had played sports against Ferris School's teams as a kid, and I knew some people around there, and they were really nice to let me not sleep there, but other than sleeping, more or less live there for a while. The other facility is in San Francisco, California, which also they were nice to let me in. And that is a court school, so it's where kids go after they've been arrested, but before they've been sentenced, adjudicated by a judge. So it's a lot more chaotic there. Kids are in for, you know, as short as an afternoon, as long as months, or even one kid I knew was in there almost a year just because his case was big and complicated. So the stress there is different in some ways. And the classrooms, because kids are just coming in and out sometimes in shackles while they go over the bridge to the courthouse next door. It's a lot to manage. And I hope that description is all right. And then the third place was actually not a detention facility. It's actually a diversion program. It's where kids are sent after they've had system contact, mostly after they've been in juvenile hall, where along with probation, they go to this life skills, really intensive life skills program in New York City, where if they can handle the classes and being together and just, you know, getting across the city to be there every day, they get paid internships and hopefully a better route to finishing high school and maybe even college.
And that place is called Exalt Youth, Youth Woodside Learning Center and the Ferris School. Jeff Hobbs is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book, Taking in These Venues, is Children of the State, Stories of Survival and Hope in the Juvenile Justice System. Talk about the different levels of security at Ferris. We're going to spend most of our time talking about that in the first part of the book. I mean, how do the people in the lower security, for example, view the people in the higher security?
So Ferris, it's on this campus, literally on kind of a grassy hill, is where all the Youth and Family Services Department of the state of Delaware, which is, as you know, not a very big state. It's all on this one campus. And so down at the bottom of the hill, there are these low security houses, which is where kids go when they're either because of their home situation, guardian situation, or just the level of their crimes. They're not quite considered able to be out on probation, but they're definitely not deserving of full residence and detention. So in these houses, kids, you know, can make choices. It's not as controlled. They can play games, watch TV, go outside and shoot hoops.
A young man named Josiah is the first one we get to know in the book. I mean, he's released from Ferris, but by page six, he's back in. Why?
So Josiah, and I really enjoy talking about him. I really admire this kid. So he spent almost a year in the cottages that I just described for a nonviolent crime. And then when he got out, he almost immediately just, he was so happy to be out and back home and back with his friends. And it was summer and he just went out with friends. And as 17-year-olds sometimes do, made some pretty bad decisions. And that landed him back at Ferris for another year, and this time in the higher security detention center up on the top of the hill.
So entering a juvenile hall was statistically dooming, you write in the book. Dooming in what sense? What's the pathway from entry?
Well, I wrote that sentence because we now talk a lot about recidivism, which is now considered pretty much the most important statistic when we're talking about justice, child or adult. And in the juvenile justice system, the numbers all around are a lot lower than the adult system, but the recidivism rate is actually higher still, despite a lot of progressive efforts to leaven the system in a lot of places. It's over 80%. And so that's all I meant by that sentence, is that 4 out of 5 kids who enter the juvenile justice system don't end up leaving it.
Well, and it doesn't seem to help that the young people don't have particular plans or know themselves very well. And you communicate that very quickly with Josiah. He seems to be, he's got a lot of capabilities, but doesn't really have any sense of how to use them or organize his life.
That's a really good point. And Josiah, he took a while to get to know. I mean, I think I described the level of access that I was granted at this center. I could kind of walk around. And I should say, it's not that crowded. I mean, the building was built for over 100 kids a long time ago. But there's generally between 20 and 30 kids living there these days. So if you hang around, you get to know everybody pretty quickly. And Josiah was really quiet, and he was obviously really sad because he had just been freed, and then he wasn't free anymore. He was really very internal, and it took me a while to learn these details, mostly from Josiah himself, but he wasn't what you'd call like a bad kid. He did go to school. He did actually pretty well in school up until age 16 when things started to go off the rails a little bit. He was consistent. He had some level of support at home. He didn't have a dad around, but he had siblings and a community. Just the intensity of suddenly that first time you go into the jail and that door is locked behind you, and he knew he's not going through that door for a year. I think it just really messed him up.
Yeah, we talk about it as jail, but it's really not. I mean, there's things that are supposed to be available anyway in juvenile justice, like schooling, that are not available in the same quantity or quality, we assume, in adult lockup. But as you examine these three places where the delivery of the services as they were supposed to be or close anyway?
Thank you for bringing up this point. I mean, I know it's a semantic point, but it's a really important one, and it's really thoughtful of you to bring up, because these are just words, detention, jail. I write books, so I care a lot about words. And I was really careful to generally, when I was there, to use the words that the system prescribes. So it's not jail, it's residence. You're not sentenced, you're adjudicated, distinctions like that. But when you start spending most of your time around the kids there, they call it jail. They don't call it anything else. They definitely don't call it school. It was actually sort of confusing for me to describe and try to keep those distinctions and be respectful of the fact that these adults do care, from the guards to the counselors to the teachers and even the administrators, just mostly doing paperwork next door. They do care, and they deserve to be able to call it a school. Even though the statistics aren't always that great, and that teacher we talked about a few minutes ago, what he said was really sad and true in some ways, about what success means. Success means staying alive. I did see in the small moments, which again is really what this book is about, the small moments and the people and the relationships. When you have just two people sitting across from each other and looking each other in the eye and listening. You felt like something was being delivered, something positive.
We'll take a short break on the Jefferson Exchange and come back and talk more with Jeff Hobbs about his book, Children of the State. Stay tuned to JPR. Jeff Hobbs is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the book Children of the State, Stories of Survival and Hope in the Juvenile Justice System. He looked at students at Ferris School in Wilmington, Delaware, the Woodside Learning Center in San Francisco, and a place called Exalt Youth in New York City in his travels. And because we recorded this a couple of days ago, I can't invite you to send emails today. Jeff, talk about the fact that this is not like adult prison. There are services. There is school for the likes of Josiah in the Ferris School in Wilmington. Their needs are looked after in ways that just doesn't happen for adults and, of course, often aren't at home. Nobody in lockup ever really appreciates that, I imagine.
The kids, for the most part, really don't appreciate it. And that's, again, why they talk about being in jail. And a lot of the conversation is pretty hopeless that way. But around them, they have their sports teams, and they get up and they do yoga often, and they go to English class and math class and history, and the food, I mean, the food's all right.
Did you try some?
Yeah, I ate a lot in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the food's all right, but it's a lot of what the kids complained about started with the food. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, so let's come back to the school point.
Anyway, all this to say that these kids are cared for.
Mm. All right, so, and in fact, Josiah does better in school while confined. I mean, and in fact, the person in charge of his schooling says, you know, you could graduate. How does he take this news?
He was almost confused by the news because he'd been... he'd been in state care for so long at that point that it sort of didn't make sense to him. But as she explained it, I mean, all those days in state care where he didn't have a choice, he had to be in the classroom every day. He was earning credits, and it actually got him back on track to graduate high school by the time he was 18. And he didn't even really see it as it was happening, because like a lot of teenagers, I mean, kids can just get very wrapped up in their own head. But because he had this counselor, Sarah Martin, and he had a new friend he'd made who was also a good student named Cassio, he had an opportunity to come out of state care or detention with a high school diploma on time.
So, but of course, there's a little intervention here in the sense of while you were working on the research for this, COVID-19 arrived and changed life at Ferris and the other places as well.
Yeah, that obviously was just hard all around.
And what
everywhere.
What did it do to Josiah's schooling?
Well, they at that school, it was chaotic and hard, like it was at thousands and thousands of schools. But through a lot of effort and quick thinking, they pretty much were able to keep the school moving along. They sort of adopted like a village schoolhouse model, where kids, instead of moving around classrooms, they you know, groups of four or five kids who tested a lot were just in the same room all day. So they were being fed their medicine in the sense of they were getting their classes in, but at the same time, for 17, 18-year-old boys being confined in one classroom all day was pretty rough.
Yeah, I can imagine. I want to depart from the schooling stuff for just a second and talk about life's lessons on turf. Before COVID set in, there's a football game you describe at some length in the book, and how it provided some real opportunities and some real tests for the boys at Ferris.
Yeah, Ferris, it's pretty rare, but they had an actual tackle football team. They've had one there since I was a kid. I mean, for decades, maybe even generations, they've been playing football at Ferris, and they're not good. And the coach explained they're never really good, but football is an important sport because it involves every kid has a different job, and it's just about respect and working together. But with sports, there's a ubiquitous word in education. It is resilience, and obviously that comes into sports in a big way, especially when your team's not good.
Yeah, and it's interesting to hear to see how different students that you describe in the book, Josiah among them, responded to the opportunity. He, for one thing, he didn't seem to know where to stand on the football field and all that stuff. But
yeah, he didn't know his position. And I don't know if you've ever seen a movie called The Best of Times with Robin Williams. It's an old movie. Josiah hadn't seen it, but there's a scene when you know, the guy is just running and he's open and he gets the perfect pass and it bounces around in his hands and then falls tragically to the grass. And that actually kind of happened to Josiah on the field when I was there, and that the poor guy.
We're talking to Jeff Hobbs here on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the book Children of the State, Stories of Survival and Hope in the Juvenile Justice System. So Josiah, obviously a major focus of the first part of the book at the Ferris School in Wilmington. He did graduate. He did get released. With what thoughts to a future? What was he thinking was going to happen next?
He got released during the pandemic that fall of 2020. And again, through all these people in the state system who had come to care about him a lot, he actually had a lacrosse scholarship to a community college in New York State. It was all sped up when he got out that fall to begin in the spring semester the following January.
Well, and you know, my heart sank when Josiah missed the bus on purpose. But there's some redemption.
He missed the first bus. And, you know, it's such a complicated dynamic, the juvenile justice system, because, I mean, you have kids locked in small spaces, and I think most people realize it's not the greatest or most humane or most effective way to punish people. But when they are locked up, they have people looking out for them, and they have nutrition, and a lot of the stress that these counselors deal with happens right when the days and weeks after the student leaves, when, again, they can't look after them anymore, and they can't, they can't inform their decisions in the same way. So even a decision as easy as getting on the bus to go to college where you have a scholarship, it was hard for Josiah, and it was hard for everybody watching, but he did eventually catch a bus and he got to college, where there were a lot of people rooting for them to succeed, but it didn't end up being the right situation for him, and he left. I mean, within a couple months. On one level there was just the fact that he was far from home in the middle of New York State in the dead of winter during a pandemic when their campus was half full. And I think most people could probably understand how lonely that might have felt. Mm-hmm. There were maybe some greater existential things also going on.
Let's leave Josiah behind in the minutes we have left, and I want to talk a bit. You mentioned Woodside Learning Center in San Francisco. It's more of a chaotic kind of short stay place. So let's move on to Exalt Youth in New York City, the diversion program, and talk about what goes on there and its usefulness perhaps as a model for other programs in juvenile justice.
It's an incredible model, Exalt. Obviously, I mean, I didn't write this book as an advocate. Really, it's like it's like the journalism of hanging out is what Tom right. Wolfe calls it. So people let me hang out and hopefully there's a lot of meaning just in letting people be themselves. But Exalt is a it's growing really fast, but it's a program. In brief, it's 4 months. It's a life skills course where every day kids go to their schools, and then every day from 4 to 6 p.m. they come to these classrooms at the Exalt office and classrooms of 15 to 20 kids where over the course they cover everything from financial literacy to the digital divide to you know, how to write a professional email for a potential employer, how to interview for jobs, and how to carry themselves in the world while still being themselves, if that makes sense. Because I think a lot of stress that kids leaving the system encounter, and that Josiah certainly encountered, has to do with the fact that in order to succeed in the traditional sense, they often, it feels like they're not allowed to be themselves anymore.
So the idea of the juvenile system as a pipeline into prison, do you feel like Exalt Youth successfully offers some kind of a true diversion from that?
It felt that way being there. There was this vitality in the classrooms, and I'm not making that up to write a book. You know, that's real, and they've had, I think, approaching 200 cycles. That's what each group that goes through is called a cycle, and their high school graduation rate is, I don't think they're allowed to say it's 100%, but it's like 99.5%. Of kids graduating high school and not going back to prison within 5 years. So I think you could say it's successful. And then I would add, like, I was there on the first day, and it was this new group of kids from all around New York City and even New Jersey. And, you know, they were just kind of suspicious of each other, you know, because they're from different neighborhoods and different experiences. And so someone commented in the middle of class, like, "I'm sorry, it just feels like we're about to fight."
Oh, jeez.
And they didn't, obviously. By the graduation night, 4 months later, which I was also privileged to be present for, it was special. Just kids reading essays about what they'd accomplished.
So, Jeff, with about a half minute left, just give us some sense of where you think things should go based on what you saw. How can we do things differently?
Well, again, I try not to comment on the system so much as on people. And there's so much effort to, like, shut down legacy institutions and create more humane environments and community-based environments, and I obviously support all that. From my experience doing this for years, I always just come back to the people. And again, it's about a caring adult sitting across from a kid who's struggling and looking him or her in the eye and saying, "I care."
And that does happen quite a bit in the book. It is Children of the State, Stories of Survival and Hope in the Juvenile Justice System, the work of Jeff Hobbs, joining us once again. He joined us earlier to talk about his book, Show Them You're Good. Jeff, good to have you back on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, this was so nice. Thanks for all your thoughtfulness.